KPFW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Are you still hanging on to VHS tapes? If so, are they beloved films or TV episodes that you want to keep just to know you'll always have them around? Or are they mostly home movies, sounds and images that can feel more concrete than even your clearest memories? The podcast The Hiss creates episodes that encourage listeners to sink into defining moments in the lives of strangers and sit there for a while. The show takes its time to slowly reveal aspects of real-life experiences that are hard to explain, without doing any overt explaining. You'll hear what I mean. In this episode of The Hiss, they give us an intimate portrait of a family who's trying their best to support each other, and how a home movie can sometimes serve as a much-needed anchor.
Well, let's just do it in chronological. Let's do her first birthday, because this is before I was in the world.
Okay.
I don't know what it... Actually, I don't even know what this one has. I know my birthday tape, but I don't know hers. So let's see. Yeah, that's my sister. She's being a performer. They're all trying to get her to look at the camera. Yeah, from as early as I can remember, she wanted to sing and perform. Like, you know, look at my first birthday tape. She's dancing in there. Yeah, like my sister uses this video. She calls back to this video once in a while, like when she gets mad or frustrated about the past, like saying, you know, look at me at, you know, when I was two or three, like I was already like dancing and I wanted to be a performer. But she will probably die. I mean, that's what she says, because of like, it's hard on her body and her heart. So it's possible that she could die before my parents do.
Which one is this?
Okay, so this one is Big Sur camping.
Oh, man.
Like a trip that we took in, I think, 93. So we were nine. I was like nine, she was like maybe 10 or 11. There's my sister right there on the yellow. Yeah, she's like the only one that kind of looks at the past, you know, in our family. I just hear my mom's voice in the back of my head saying, like, don't tell anybody, you know.
Do you feel uncomfortable about talking about this? Like, honestly?
A little bit. Why? Is that bad?
No. I just don't want to be pushing you.
No, it's fine. I think it's good. For this story, you know? Yeah, my sister has schizophrenia. So it's a big shame thing in Korean culture. Like, especially in Korean culture, like, if you're disabled or like you have mental illness, it's like so bad. It's like you're cursed basically, and like nobody wants to talk about it. And I hate that. It's really stupid. We say it's like genetic, but it was also stress induced because she was pushed too hard and it, you know, broke her mind. It was just pressure from my parents, you know? In general, like, growing up, my sister was such a sweet girl. Like, whatever my parents wanted her to do, she would just do it, like, faithfully. Like, oh, you know, practice piano for 4 hours straight. Like, yeah, she'll do it. Or I remember she was really successful in a spelling bee, like, in elementary. She went to, like, the national level. And then, like, I was only a year behind her. So when it was our turn, like, my year to do it, I'm naturally a really good speller. So I could have gotten to that level. But right when they did the first round, I purposely misspelled a word. Because I saw what happened to her. Like, she was, like, always, like, studying and stuff like that. And, like, I'm different than her. Like, I'm more rebellious and, like, I want to have fun and stuff. So I wasn't like her, where she's submissive. And so what happened in high school was she wanted to go to, like, a performing arts high school, actually. But the parents wouldn't let her do that. She's like, no, study hard. Education is the way to go. And every Korean kid growing up, second-generation kid, their parents pushed them really hard to go to UC or Ivy League schools. And she didn't want to do it. She couldn't handle these classes. So she asked him, please get me out of this. Like, saying, like, I can't, like, this is crazy. Like, she was, like, losing weight. And, like, she was, like, really skinny. And, like, she had, like, diarrhea every morning. Like, she just couldn't handle it. I remember her telling me where she was just at her desk and she started, like, laughing, like, uncontrollably. Yeah, she just started laughing, and then my dad was like, what the, like, why are you laughing? And then she, like, I don't know what she said, but then he went to my mother and told her, like, she's laughing for no reason. Like, that's when it hit them that something was wrong. I was just in my own world at the time, you know, in high school, and I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know, like, yeah, that level of severity, like, how it was permanent.
Until the signs that you knew that something was wrong?
Oh, I mean, she went to the hospital and stuff, so it's like, something's wrong. One time, my sister was saying my parents are crazy. They had their, like, evil scheme, like, they're, like, possessed by demons. So when the police came, we went with the police to the hospital, the mental hospital. And then I sat in the office with my mom and talked with one of the doctors, and I was, like, completely exposed to everything. And then I visited her when she was at that hospital, and, like, she'd be watching TV in the room, and then, like, she'd think, like, something from the TV's communicating to her. Well, like, for instance, like, she'll be watching a film, it's, like, Colin Farrell's in, and she's like, oh, he's in the film, he's the hero, he's trying to save me, you know? Or, you know, Michael Jackson's, like, coming over right now to meet me, or something like that. Like, just straight up delusions, like, yeah. One time she stripped naked and she ran out in the streets in our neighborhood. Like, she went to some stranger's house and they found her, like, a family, like, they found her and the police were called and stuff. Like, see, these things, I had no idea what, I was, like, gone. I was outside hanging out with friends or something. I didn't know this would happen. A couple times I remember coming home and there'd be police there. So, cause, like, trying to contain her or whatever, like, yeah, it was just, like, thoughts saying, oh, you have to take your clothes off now, you have to, like, somebody telling her to do something in her head. So I remember one time she was in her room and she locked it, and I don't even know why we had a lock at that time. It's so stupid to do that on a person that's like that, but she was, like, destroying stuff in her room, like, taking all her clothes out and throwing it out the window. And I heard all this noise and I thought she was, like, trying to kill herself or something, so I tried to, like, break down the door. And when parents were there, they were just trying to call the cops. I'm like, you need to help her, like, you know, she has, like, night terrors, so sometimes she'll be in bed and she'll, like, shriek in the middle of the night and wake everybody up because she's, like, having who knows what kind of scary thoughts in her dreams. She can't even rest, like, she has to take medication, you know, and I've been there for a couple times, like, when I slept over, it woke me up, and I was like, it's the scariest thing, like, hearing that kind of scream in the middle of the night. There's another instance she told me where she'd be in class and she'd be crying and writing me a letter. like saying, please help me, like get me out of this, like, because no one else was helping her, you know, like her parents, like they're the ones she's supposed to go to for help. They weren't helping her, they were making it worse. So she wrote that letter to me, but she never gave it to me. And
she said what?
I don't know why she didn't give it to me. But to save her, yeah, like during that time, if she was like writing a letter to me and say, please help me, I would like freaking, you know, barge into the house and like punch my parents, like to save her, like seriously, like out of this hellhole like that it was. I would do anything in the world right now to take back, you know, what happened to her. It's horrible.
Did she tell you what was going on in her, inside her mind when that's happening?
I mean, it's just, when you're in that mode, that delusion is reality and you believe it completely. It's kind of like a dream, I guess, you know? Yeah, she's the only reason we still have that, a VCR, because, like, of these tapes, and, like, tapes that she recorded, TV, she recorded stuff, like, performers, like Mariah Carey or somebody on TV, she recorded it, and then she has them all on tape, and she would, like, still look back on it, like, old, like, Paula Abdul, like, old stuff from the 90s, like, VHS tapes that we had, so it's, like, she's still... It's all about the past and stuff. So, like, once in a while, she'll be just in the living room if I ever visit home, and she's still playing stuff. And I'll just walk through the living room, she'll be like, and then I'll just sit down and, like, eventually watch it with her. We're trying to go hang out more, like, go watch movies. Like, I love movies are my life, so, like, she's just recently kind of come into that, like realizing how cool it is to like go to a theater and escape for like 2 hours, just be in another world and escape, like just to relax. And she can like relate to films. Like I took her to see Southpaw, like, and she freaking loved it. Like she was like, oh my god, I understand Jake Gyllenhaal's character, like all the shit he has to go through, like struggling being an underdog. Like, so I'm like really happy that like she can like that stuff. She likes Eminem too, so he did the soundtrack. It's funny because actually my parents, I think their relationship got better through this. And that's one of the things that my sister sometimes, it comes up when she's yelling about, like when she yells about this stuff, it comes up that, oh, you know, it took my suffering to help you guys, like, to come together, you know? All those times when she cries and she yells about her past, regretting her life that she has, she's just looking at the past, and I just try to be there for her, to comfort her and support her. Like, it's difficult, yeah, we'll go out, and sometimes, like, you know, we'll watch a movie and it'll be great, and then, like, it could be something as simple as, like, a look or something you say, and she'll be off. Like, once a negative thought enters, then it just goes into the whole thing of, like, I shouldn't even be sick, like, and then the whole blame thing, and then crying, and yeah. Early on when that would happen, I just would get mad. The funny thing is, like, I still see my dad reacting to that. So what she'll say is like, oh, you don't know anything about my experience. And then she'll go into like, you suck, like you're horrible, like you, and she'll point out everything about you, like flaw, and like explode it to the max and say like you're like basically like the worst person ever. And it really hurts, like, and when I first went through that when I was young, it hurts so much. I'm like, wow, like she's saying so much truth. Like, she's been with me since I was a little kid. She knows how you know, how rotten I was as a little brat kid, and like she's pulling all that against me, and my mom just like can't deal with it. She walks away, or she gets mad. Like, and then even my dad, like he's still reactive to when she's saying all those ugly things about a person. He still reacts to it. It's really hard on them. I see it in their face too, like the age in the last 2 years. It's really gotten to them.
Stepping up on a straight leg each time.
At one point, my mom would go to these like meetings with other families that were dealing with their own children having schizophrenia or some kind of, you know, whatever it is. And the thing that she told me about it was that my sister's doing so much better than anybody else. Like, they can't do anything, you know, they just stay home and like watch TV or like just eat and like, I mean, who knows? My sister's pretty miserable right now, but like she's doing way better than them. She's like disciplined. She gets up every morning and takes care of herself and goes out to dance classes in LA, like West Hollywood or whatever. Like these, you know, these studios filled with like people that are, these people that are like very harsh in how they view other people and they judge each other, like the way you dance, the way you look. And so she's, imagine that pressure, like even a normal person has, like, is difficult to deal with, but she has to deal with it with her, you know, her illness. And like, she would come home sometimes from that and just cry, or she would have to leave the class and she would just drive home crying because she feels horrible. And I can't imagine it, man. Like, and then another thing is like the stress of like being around all these younger people, like fit young people that have been dancing from like freaking 3 years old. Like, and she's like, what, early 30s now? Like, you can't, you have no future in dance. Like, you can't. You can be a teacher or that's it. She always talks about, I never got to enjoy my 20s. My whole youth was taken from me. I think she's happy when she's dancing. She's happy when she's performing. She gets a gig, it's amazing. Like, and then we get to go to it and support her and she's like happy and, you know, we get to videotape it or whatever.
The Hiss was co-created by Robert Garava and James Kim, with original score for that episode by Ryo Baum and mixing by Valentino Rivera. They're working on a new season that's expected to be released on the early side of 2017. The best way to listen to the first season of The Hiss is via their podcast feed on iTunes or on SoundCloud. Tuned to The Spot, KALW's weekly showcase of the best stories from indie radio producers and podcasts. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. The ability to fall deeply into memories is a gift most humans have. It can be a necessary tool to connect with our friends and our family, and passing along these memories can also be integral to younger generations fully grasping the shape and the sounds of a community who occupied a place that no longer exists. In the 1930s and 40s, African Americans in Roanoke, Virginia, were restricted to just a few neighborhoods. One was Gainsborough, just over the tracks from downtown. Among the many businesses started by Black entrepreneurs in the Gainsborough area, there was a swimming pool and dance hall called Dreamland. Now, Dreamland is gone, but producers Jesse Dukes and Allison Swaim spoke to a few Roanoke residents who still remember.
Dreamland was just special. I don't think there was another place in Roanoke like it. Especially for Black folks.
It was just like a summer resort, like, for Black people. because when I was coming to that age, you couldn't go to Aunt Tandy.
I just remember the swimming pool.
Oh, sure. I went there swimming. So we go there. The swimming pool was open during the summer. You paid at the counter, 25 cents. We were going to change your clothes. They had a place back up for you to change, and one for women, one for the men.
I even cut school sometimes. Couldn't go swimming, kind of.
That was an exciting thing for me to go down there and see him go off that diving board.
We had a fellow there. His name was Elburn Williams. He was a great swimmer. So he would teach you how to swim, be with you. And we called him River Man.
We used to go over and go swimming at night when the place was closed. And the police come by and says, like, we're high. When they leave, we go back in. Going at buck naked. We did it, though.
Did we ever go to Lakeside?
Well, Lakeside was an amusement park that was segregated.
I don't think we ever went to Lakeside.
They only had one day reserved for black people.
The last day.
The last day before they closed up. Mm-hmm. Black folk could go.
Mm-hmm. I know I'm good, man. Don't kind of segregate it. And give me one day, I wouldn't go. I hate to think about it. That's true.
In 1940s, I would say Gainesboro was an all-African-American neighborhood.
Most of our businesses were here.
We had everything that we really needed.
Most of our schools and most of our churches.
Stores, and we had Washington Park and Dreamland. And
Mr. Hale, that's the guy that owned his name was Mr. Hale.
Robert and Ellen Hale.
Mr. Hale knew what he was doing.
Okay, this is from the Roanoke Times. In 1936, 75 years ago, there's an ordinance granted to Robert N. Hale, colored, permission to use water from the spring in Washington Park for a swimming pool he proposed to construct, and it was passed on a first reading. My late father was the nephew of Ellen Hale, so I've got the photographs of Dad being the lifeguard at the swimming pool.
You know, I knew Miss Hale and her husband. They were nice people.
Very well liked, very well respected.
It was nice. They sold hot dogs in there.
Taskmasters both.
They were kind people, and with the children and the other relatives working, I think they were successful by working together as a team.
I remember Mr. Hill very well.
Oh, man.
He didn't have no stuff going on in his place.
He was a jovial guy. He was a...
Oh, he's a mighty fine man.
A jokester.
For his light complexion.
He had a knot on the back of his head. I don't know what it was about, but he said it was a knowledge knot that his brain was coming all out of his head and everything.
We had this beautiful room. And there was a jukebox there, had soft drinks, and it was real nice.
Well, that's where most of all the girls went. Dreamland.
People relaxing and having fun, dancing. I learned how to dance there.
Oh, I met my wife there.
It was about six of us with plan to go. And the boys would come in, and you know, the girls sit here and the boys sit there. And then somebody played a jukebox, and then it looked like the guys were saying, who's going to go first, you know. But once one person got out on, one couple got on the floor, that was it.
They played, they had a band.
If you've seen some of the old movies, you know how they would jitterbug.
Trumpets.
Guys swinging.
Trombones.
And all that stuff. I don't know. I've just seen the movie. I'm sure that's what she was doing.
Dance. Whole band.
Two-step. Yeah,
blues,
all the
two-step. Waltzes.
I didn't do all that.
I don't know.
I didn't
what
do
the
all that exotic
dancing,
but I can dance.
You could go down to Roca all in the middle of tuxedo for $6. And you came there dressed. You didn't come there with your breeches hanging down. I'd bring my girlfriend. We'd dance with other people. Social.
Just dancing.
In 1947, this city
decided to widen Orange Avenue. Then it was widened, so it went up.
And that took out Dreamland.
If it was there today, it would be right in the middle of that highway.
It was a big loss. It was a big loss.
After they tore it down.
I mean, where else could you go to go swimming?
We didn't have anywhere to go.
We had to have it. We had to have it.
No one really likes to change. See, I mean, it's just something that you see, just like. You can't stop progress.
Sometimes change is good, but the way they swept through this area was uncaring. Sure, times change, but you must be honest with that change.
We thought we were safe, but we weren't. They came and took Dreamland. That was it. Just like that.
Remembering Dreamland was produced in 2013 by Jesse Dukes and Allison Swaim for Big Shed Media and WVTF Radio IQ, with support from the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. If you want to hear more stories like that one, check out the Big Shed podcast on iTunes.
There's a land that I have heard about so far across the sea. There's a land that I have heard about so far.
That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org, and you'll find The Spot under the Programs tab. And tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have a suggestion for a podcast we should feature, drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Tune in next Sunday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on 91.7 KALW San Francisco. So much fun.